640 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. A former monster of the Midway has died. CBS's Jim Krasula has more.
Menacing Hall of Fame linebacker Dick Butkus, who played 9 NFL seasons for the Chicago Bears, has died at the age of 80. His family says he died in his sleep at his home in Malibu, California.
Butkus's beat is from sideline to sideline, and he's a tireless, tenacious roamer.
The Chicago native, one of the most intimidating players in NFL history, retired at 31 and later acted in movies, TV shows, and commercials. Jim Krasula, CBS News.
The Biden administration defends the fast-tracking of a southern Texas border wall. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre.
DHS is required by law to use the funds for appropriated purpose.
More from CBS's Nancy Cordes.
18-foot-high steel panels will be installed along a 20-mile stretch of the Rio Grande near McAllen, Texas. President Biden insisted he didn't want to build the wall, but that his hands were tied by a law Congress passed in 2019.
They have to use the money for what is appropriate. I can't stop that.
Thousands of healthcare workers at Kaiser Permanente are walking the picket lines for a second day, demanding higher wages and better working conditions. Caroline Lucas of the Coalition of Kaiser Permanente Union says wages have not kept pace with inflation.
No one wants our healthcare workers to be struggling to make ends meet to the point where we have, you know, frontline healthcare workers sleeping in cars or with second jobs trying to make it in this economy.
The former University of Southern California gynecologist charged with sexually abusing more than a dozen students and accused of abuse by hundreds more has died before going to trial. George Tyndall's attorney says the 76-year-old was found dead in his home yesterday, and there is no evidence of foul play or suicide. The wife of a black man shot to death by police in Alabama last week have met with the Morgan County District Attorney. An officer shot Stephen Perkins outside his home after being called to the home because of a confrontation with a towed truck driver who had gone there to repossess a vehicle. Police said Perkins had produced a gun. Attorney Lee Merritt represents Perkins' wife.
Justice for the Perkins family would not only be the termination of every officer involved, but it would mean criminal convictions and appropriate sentencing.
Outside City Hall in San Francisco, family and friends attended the funeral of late Senator Dianne Feinstein, who died last week. San Francisco Mayor London Breed praised Feinstein as a trailblazer and a role model.
Millions of girls my age and long after me have grown blissfully free of the yokes our grandmothers wore because Dianne Feinstein wrestled them off, because she showed the way.
This is CBS News.
If you need to hire, you need Indeed, because Indeed's all-in-one hiring solution helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates all from one place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
Civic Media radio stations, providing your news, conversations, and fun you won't find anywhere else.
With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. City of Waukesha officials are offering water changeover tips as they prepare to switch to Lake Michigan water on Monday. The Waukesha Water Utility is advising people to remove or bypass in-home water filtration systems, including those used with water dispensers or attached to kitchen faucets. Customers should also bypass any reverse osmosis systems, resuming filter use after the transition or once they've flushed their systems. A 9-year-old boy who was struck by a suspected drunk driver in West Allis last week has regained consciousness. Doctors say Ben Modell is fighting for his life in the IC unit at Children's Hospital. The incident occurred while he was hit by a car crossing the street, with the 73-year-old driver being arrested on suspicion of OWI. With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles.
The Carroll University football team is on the road again this Saturday, October 7th. The Pioneers travel to Naperville, Illinois to take on number one Division III and defending national champs North Central College. You can catch all of the action live with Don and Johnny. Pregame at 5:30, kickoff at 6. It's the Pios at the Cardinals live this Saturday night on the Shaw WAUK Radio 540 AM, 101.1 FM, and the Civic Media app.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
My name is Teresa Barber. I was in the United States Navy, and I served overseas in the Middle East and Africa. Early on in my career, I had a commander that taught our suicide prevention training, and the very next day, he took his own life. 90% of suicide attempts involving a gun are fatal. My way of continuing my service is to help protect my community by being a responsible gun owner and by storing firearms safely. Store all your guns securely. Help stop suicide.
Brought to you by End Family Fire and the Ad Council.
News.bradblog.com.
Are you tired of think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. Day two of no speaker vacation in the House of Representatives. And the children, yes, the children are running amok. In fact, McCarthy allies they're talking revenge. They're plotting against their other Republicans. They're going to get them back. You wait and see. And look, I got a bunch of emails today from all the different right-wing MAGA groups saying, with Matt Gaetz saying, I'm under attack. Yeah, Matt, you kind of pulled this on yourself. You kind of did the dumb thing that everyone said don't do. You touch the button, you touch the hot stove, and now you're surprised that you're going to get burned. And oh, are you going to get burned? In fact, you're going to get Cawthorned. It is going to happen. If you remember what happened with Madison Cawthorn, remember him? Remember the cautionary tale we talked about him? Lots of dirty laundry. Lots of weird kind of him in bizarre poses with other naked men. There was all kinds of stuff. All kinds of stuff. And this is one of those things where if you live in a glass house, you don't throw stones. Don't do it. You just don't do dumb stuff. So it has begun. Mark Wayne Mullen, the senator. Now, this is the thing. The House is usually where all this insanity plays itself out. You know, because it's supposed to. The House is where the rages of the people are supposed to rage. You're supposed to have chaos a little bit. The Senate is where the upper chamber, where the adults are supposed to be. But you had Mark Wayne out today. Oh, Mark Wayne threw the opening salvo in the Cawthorning of Matt Gaetz. Brad evidently said that Matt Gaetz told him. Bragged how he would crush up erectile dysfunction medicine and then snort it and chase it with energy drinks so he could go all night long. I said, this is obviously before he got married. And this is another one of those things where you go, wait a second. You said he had sex with underage women. You can't have sex with an underage girl. You can't. Because it's a crime. It's called rape. That's what that's called. And by you saying that he did, kind of pulls you in. We're in kind of weird territory. So while they're cawthorning Matt Gaetz, and no one deserves it more than Matt Gaetz, going to be interesting to see how this plays out. Because ultimately, the Republicans want their pound of flesh. They're going to get their revenge. And this is, you know, some people are saying, could this be the end of the party? I don't know. I'm not going that far. But there will be a pie fight. Now, here's the thing. I don't need a Harvard professor to tell me that things are bad. In fact, Daniel Ziblatt, his name is, was a professor of government at Harvard University. He was quoted in the Washington Post. And look, again, you don't necessarily need to be a Harvard professor. He says, if you want to know what it looks like when democracy is in trouble, this is what it looks like. It should set off alarm bells that something is not right. And look, something has not been right for some time. You know, the fact that we elected a reality TV star as president and then expected him to have plans that he didn't. We expected the Republican Party to change its spots and not enrich the wealthy and actually do something, anything for the working class. Things are not right. Now, on the Democratic side, things are right. Joe Manchin said that he would have voted for Kevin McCarthy, which you go, of course you would have, Joe, because that's what you do. But today, the fun, the entertainment, the main talking points all over the right-wing outrage machine has been Trump, Speaker Trump. In fact, Trump, I guess, put out a picture of himself as Speaker, which is kind of weird. But Marjorie Trainwreck Greene, she threw out a tweet today saying, and this is brilliant. I want this for her. Now, remember when Kevin McCarthy was running for Speaker and took him 15 times to get there? I said, look, I want this for him because I envisioned this coming. Chaos was never not the end result. So I said, look, I want him to wake up every morning with acid reflux and heartburn from knowing he's going to have to wake up and see, you know, the Matt Gaetzes and the rest of the Kook caucus. And I want him to go to bed thinking about them. And I want him to have nightmares about them. And during the day, I want them to bump into each other in the hall. And that's what's happened. But now Marjorie Taylor Greene has given me a new hope. I want Donald Trump as Speaker. No, it's horrible for democracy, horrible for the country. It's going to be terribly destructive, bad thing. But she tweeted out today, if Trump becomes Speaker of the House chamber will be a Trump rally every day. Have you seen a Trump rally? Have you seen the insanity? Have you seen the craziness? She said it would be the House of MAGA. And here's the thing, if you weren't afraid of what we've been talking about for years now, an authoritarian dictatorship, a King Trump, a MAGA house would bring that. Now, evidently, Trump is going to visit the House Republicans. I haven't gotten the definitive answer yet, but there's a possibility he's going to Capitol Hill. You know, kind of talking. And he said, look, he's not going to be permanent Speaker. Might do it for 90 days. You know, he might give it a, you know, a temporary part-time kind of thing. Because that's how Trump does things. That's how Trump rolls. Only problem is, you know, going to have to change some rules. You know, those 91 indictments. Minor impediment. But hey, nothing that the Republicans can't overcome. Now, the weird thing is, you know, the not in love with Trump crowd, they're going to have to say yes to him, which means death for them at home. So for me, I'm like, yeah, absolutely. Let's bring Trump in. Let's make sure that he is Speaker. Let's give him the gavel. Let's let him bloviate. Let's let him say all the crazy stuff he's been saying. And maybe the mainstream corporate controlled media, maybe they'll pay attention because they haven't been to this point. Nothing. And this is the part that bothers me. With all of the violent rhetoric that's been coming out of his mouth, you know, there was a piece over at the Washington Post today, you know, where he's saying, look, Trump's talking about extrajudicial killings, you know, that hasn't been covered by the mainstream media. You know, talking about, you know, he talked about, you know, when people loot, that, you know, we should be able to just shoot people. And, you know, you know, we should be shooting people and doing all this stuff. And the mainstream media didn't pick up on it. It was nothing. It just went. And I'll be honest, I let it go too, because I'll be honest, every crazy thing he says, I have to decide whether, is this something worth amplifying? Is this something worth giving attention to? Like a child. I mean, this is like a child. Do you give bad behavior attention? And our media has always given him all of the attention his ego has ever craved. And the thing is he's getting further and further off the fringe. He's getting further and further off the beaten path to get that attention, to get that fix. For instance, you know, he was interviewed by Hassan over at MSNBC. And this phrase he's used a couple of times. All these immigrants coming in, you know, nobody knows where they're coming from. Nobody knows if they were coming from prisons or mental health institutions or insane asylum. Nobody knows anything. Nobody knows if they're terrorists. Nobody knows anything. You know, playing on people's fears. He says, you know, it's very sad for our country. It's poisoning the blood of our country. It's poisoning the blood of our country. And look, rightly, everyone who paid attention to this is thinking, holy moly, that sounds a lot like 1930s Hitler rhetoric. Because it is. Now, understand, you know, Trump says he's a student, kept the book right in his bedstand, evidently, kept speeches in Hitler speeches in his nightstand. I don't know that that's nighttime reading, maybe in Trump world. But we're in this place where how do we handle this? Somebody who clearly wants violence, clearly wants the destruction of our social norms, the destruction of our institutions for their power, for their control, for their worldview. Democracy be damned. That constitution that they talk about that they've never read, that be damned. It's about their power and their control. And ultimately, it comes down to wealth and money. So, you know, the more I look at this, the more I'm concerned. And while I'm kind of trying to make light of a Speaker Trump, because I think it would maybe be a shock to our system, maybe Americans would start to pay attention, maybe put down the American Idol and Cheetos or whatever it is that the bread and circus of today is, and maybe start paying attention to the reality that democracy is under attack, that the world that we grew up in, the America I grew up loving and wanting to defend, that America is going away quickly. And as the Harvard professor says, you know, right now, something's wrong. This is what it looks like when democracy is in trouble. This is it. Alarm bells should be going off in every freedom-loving American's head, because something is not right. And what's not right is we've got a Republican Party that seems to be in the pocket of a foreign dictator, seem to be doing the bidding of Putin, and somebody and social norms be damned. History be damned. But I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I got a lot to get to, a lot to talk about. Quick break, right back after this. Stick around.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
And look, with all of this chaos, we still haven't even talked about what's going to happen down the road. Government shutdown's coming quickly. What, 42 days now? We got 43 days until the next one, the next fear. And we've got no functional government. Nothing. Let's go to the phones. Got Steve on line one from Chicago. Steve, how are you today?
Yes, I'm fine. Well, in this case, it's Steve from Dallas. I'm in Dallas on business. And for anybody who doesn't travel very much, I mean, in this day and age, I would suggest getting out and about and seeing exactly what it is that's going on in your country, because this is very much a country that's divided. Every time I come down here to Dallas or Houston, I go out to Arizona, a few other places where I do business. Yeah, it's night and day from Chicago. Or when I do business in New York, and I have an office in D.C., it is amazing the way in which people here think about what's going on in the world. Because you would think that Joe Biden was, you know, Mao Zedong reincarnated. If you talk to them, I mean, they literally believe that, you know, the federal government is going to kick in their door any day and take all of their guns, and that, you know, that their kid's slot at Texas A&M and UT is going to be taken by some Venezuelan immigrant. I mean, this is the level of crazy. But, you know, we didn't get here overnight. I mean, I would argue that, I mean, you can go back further, but in terms of the modern age, this starts with Ronald Reagan and the whole, you know, government is the problem, not the solution. And this is the birth of the modern neocons. And then they had their run until they crashed the economy in 2008 and 2009. At which point, you know, the populist part of the movement of conservatives in this country said, okay, who can we trust? We can't trust these people anymore. I mean, you know, they were promising us trickle-down economics. I'm still waiting for my money to trickle down.
Yep.
And then they crashed the economy. Well, along comes the populists, the Tea Party nuts.
The Buchanan wing.
We're now the Freedom Caucus. Yeah, exactly. So these are the wackos who you needed it as a substitute for the people whose policies had failed. Of course, we, the sensible human beings on the planet, were always saying the same thing with regard to neocon trickle-down economics. It was ridiculous, and it was never going to work. And it'd be, why? Because we actually have history to show us that it doesn't work. When the robber barons of the 19th century made their fortunes, and then, by the way, many of those fortunes were greater than anything that exists today when you control for inflation, they did not share that wealth, this idea that we're simply just going to share wealth. No, instead it was a race to the bottom, just like it's been a race to the bottom since the Reagan era. So now you have the populists, and, of course, you know, they're a Frankenstein monster at the Republican Party. They're not the majority of Republicans, but they're enough of the Republican Party to where they hold sway over the party. And so now sensible Republicans can't govern, if there is such a thing. I would argue that, okay, I don't agree with Republicans, but there are some of them that I could work with. I could work with a Liz Cheney. I don't contend that I have anything in common with her in terms of policy, or Mitt Romney or Adam Kinzinger or others, but they were sane human beings who in the end would say that America comes first. And that, you know, that politics needs to end at the shore. No matter what else happens in this country, that the survival of the republic comes first, before any human being, before any party, before any ideology. Today, no. Like, Donald Trump would be willing to burn down this country as long as he could be king of the ashes. And that's what we've come to. And unfortunately, it's going to take sensible people in the Republican Party, because I don't think we as Democrats or progressives, liberals, ever you want to label us, we can't save them. They've got to save themselves. We can hope to get as many independents on our side with regard to elections and policies, but they need to save their own party because, as I've said before, this country does need two functional parties if it's going to survive.
Yep.
Because I don't agree with much of what Republicans have to say, but I do think that they represent a large cohort of voters in this country. And if those people don't feel that they're represented in government, that's very much problematic with regard to the potential for instability in society. So, yes, I mean, they need to save their party. I don't know exactly how they do it other than remaking it, saying, you know what, we just divest ourselves of the wackos, the Matt Gaetz, the Marjorie Taylor Greens, the Lauren Boberts, and, yes, of course, the Donald Trumps. and we go back to being the party that we used to be, at least to the degree that, you know, we were common sense people and we knew that, you know, that that destroying the country isn't a victory. That's like saying, you know what, you can win a nuclear war. No, you can't win a nuclear war.
No, I've said for years, you know, Republicans, take your party back somewhere near the same line. It's going to come back. It comes down to the voters. It comes down to people not buying into the kind of rhetoric. But sadly, what Trump says appeals to a large number of voters in this country. The kind of misogyny, the kind of homophobia, the kind of nationalism, that kind of stuff sells in Republican circles.
Yeah, well, our problem is that.
Go ahead.
No, go right ahead.
I would argue some on the left as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We have our fringe elements as well. And to be perfectly frank, going into 2024, given how important an election it is, if I had my way, I would, you know, put a muzzle on some of them. Just be quiet. You're not helping us in this election cycle. Okay, I understand that we're a party of a lot of voices. But, you know, we don't want to give them ammunition because we've got some fringe nuts. And then when they say open their mouths, then the Republicans latch onto that, and that becomes the talking point at Fox for a week, when that person does not represent the vast majority of Democrats in this country. And so, yes, I mean, we've got to do something about how people assimilate knowledge, because unfortunately, like I said, I travel. You can try and talk to these people as if you're using reason and rationality, logic, scientific methodology, asking them to look at research, asking them to look at the scholarship in these fields and the history of it. No. They have their own sources. Some of them are out and out right nuts with regard to where they're getting their information. And they believe this stuff. I mean, I have met people who believe that Donald Trump is still secretly running this country.
I know.
Yeah.
But yet it's Joe Biden's fault for the inflation.
Right, exactly. And I'm like, okay, so in other words, what do you take issue with? And would you then blame Donald Trump? Oh, they get confused on that one. You know, it's hard keeping up with the conspiracies, and I'm actually ashamed of myself that I find myself trying to keep up with this. Okay, so let me see. Donald Trump is going to parachute into onto the White House lawn with JFK Jr., who isn't really dead, and they're going to take power and save the country.
Yeah, well, you're down there in Dallas. They were supposed to come back to Dealey Plaza. But Steve, I appreciate the thoughts, man. Great stuff.
Thank you.
Let's go to Alice on line two. Alice, how are you today?
Somewhat insane.
So what's on your mind?
Not totally. What I wanted to say is this. We've really got some deep issues here. And as a society, we're going to have to make some very tough decisions. And here's what it comes down to. We have a minority rule by a bunch of, let's just flat out tell it like it is, lunatics who want to do nothing more than to destroy the Constitution, to destroy our nation, and set it up as some sort of weird biblical right-wing fascist paradise kind of deal. And we're going to have to really make some tough decisions, but instead we sit back and go, well, no, we can't do that because that would be against their rights. Obviously, what we need to do is say, okay, these people are right-wing terrorists and throw their hind ends in jail. But we won't do that because we don't want to offend the right wing, because they'll cry and they'll say how they're being picked on because they're Christians or Republicans or white. I mean, that's what it comes down to. But at some point, we're going to have to do this because here's the deal. If we don't, they're going to take over. And I can assure you, they're not going to worry about whether it's somebody's constitutional rights or not.
No, you got that right. Appreciate the thoughts, Alice.
So, have a good evening.
No, that's, you know, like I you, when you stop and think about where we're heading and you listen to the rhetoric coming out of the right-wing spin machine. And I spend a little time every day listening to the outrage factory on the right. And it's all about how horrible Joe Biden is and how everything's his fault. And you get into the real kook stuff. Trump's still running things. And, you know, it's amazing that we've gotten where we've gotten. And I blame the fact that we have a corporate control of our media that has gotten so large that there's no more local newspapers. There's very little local, trustable local news anymore. And the stuff that is, it's all bad. Because the moneyed interests don't want an informed, active, engaged populace. They want what they've got. They want people who are just smart enough to do the jobs, but not smart enough to realize they're getting screwed and divided and ready to eat each other at every opportunity. Scary, scary stuff. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. When we come back, my good friend Sarah Burris is going to be here to share some thoughts on the top stories of the day. Back after this. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1886. That was the day Henry George accepted the nomination to run for mayor of New York on the United Labor Party ticket. In cities across the country, trade unionists met to found state labor parties and to hammer out political platforms for local and state elections. In New York City, ULP advocates issued the Clarendon Hall platform and nominated Henry George as the ULP candidate for the mayoral race. George had gained prominence with the 1879 publishing of his book, Progress and Poverty. In it, he addressed private land ownership as the basis for inequality and advocated for a single tax system. At New York's Cooper Union that evening, where thousands of supporters gathered, George addressed the crowd. He presented the ULP platform of higher wages, shorter hours, better working conditions, government ownership of railroads and communications, and the end to police repression. Burroughs and Wallace described the scene that night in their book, Gotham, A History of New York City, to 1898. During his speech, George declared, quote, "This government of New York City, our whole political system is rotten to the core." He argued that politicians had made a trade out of assembling votes and selling them to powerful interests. What business got in return was police protection, lax enforcement of housing and health codes, friendly judges, and fat franchises. To purify the political order, working class voters had to sever ties to all the established parties and choose from their own ranks. For a party that had just been founded weeks before, George came in second. But like its sister organization in Chicago, the New York ULP would split over issues of socialism within a year. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
What amazes me about outbreaks of bribery among high government officials is not just the level of greed involved, but that the take is often so cheesy. For example, there seems to be no end to the ongoing saga of Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas's peddling his position and prestige to right-wing corporate titans for what? Free rides on their jets, golf outings, and assorted baubles. He's supposed to be an impartial justice, but he consistently supports rich interests who are picking up his tabs. We taxpayers provide $274,000 a year in salary to Thomas. Why wouldn't he buy his own baubles and protect a smidgen of his judicial integrity? Now comes New Jersey's Senator Robert Menendez, chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, who has been oddly insistent on giving U.S. weaponry and financial aid to Egypt's repressive military dictatorship. Why? Because Menendez has sunk butt deep into influence peddling, using his position to advance Egyptian interests. In exchange, Egyptian agents have blessed him with huge wads of cash, gold bullion, a Mercedes-Benz convertible, and a no-show job for his wife. Oh, they also delivered an air purifier for his home. Seriously? An air purifier? That's a mighty cheap sellout. Yet, what a priceless symbol of the whole stinky deal. Meanwhile, Menendez says that the donations are unrelated to his honest concerns about our Mideast foreign policy. He proudly asserts that his senatorial assistance is just the, quote, normal work of a congressional office. This is Jim Hightower saying, sadly, he's right. Most Senate offices today routinely do official favors for moneyed interests in exchange for millions of dollars in bribes. But that's such an ugly word, so they call the big money payments campaign contributions. Then they get indignant when we call the system corrupt, but that's what it is.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, big news. Got breaking news. This is actual big breaking news. Don't do this very often. Don't do the breaking news, hey, look at us kind of stuff. But this breaking, that's why I've brought in my good friend Sarah Burris. She's a reporter over at rawstory.com, the website. She has a big story. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us. What is the breaking news? What is the big story? What is this momentous? What is this thing?
Hey, so our favorite New York lawyer, Michael Cohen, woke me up from my afternoon nap and said, hey, guess what? Donald Trump dropped his $500 million lawsuit against me. And the thing that is so major about this is Trump has basically been running from a deposition since he filed this lawsuit in April. Like from the very beginning, he filed it in April and he goes, and by the way, we don't really want to do anything with this lawsuit until October. And it's like, that's not how that works. No. Like immediately you go, okay, let's do depositions. Let's go through with all of the court procedure, yada, yada, yada. They didn't want to do anything. And so Trump has kind of spent the last 6-7 months delaying until ultimately that's what happened, is he delayed it until October. Well, now the dude was supposed to give a deposition on Tuesday and he told the judge in Miami, oh my God, I cannot be there in Miami because I have to be in New York for this civil trial. You know, the civil trials are really important. I have to be there to, you know, uphold my name of my company and my family name and yada, yada, yada. And then he left. So basically it looks like he lied to the judge.
Yeah.
And so Trump was supposed to show up and give his deposition next, I think Monday. And so tonight he was just like, no, I'm dropping it. But Cohen just sent me a text message. He says, as I've said from the beginning, this case was nothing more than a retaliatory intimidation tactic and an attempt to hide from routine discovery procedures confirms as much. This is my favorite part. Mr. Trump's cowardly dismissal spells the end of this latest attempt to deter me from providing truthful testimony against him. Yay. My legal team and I now look forward to turning our full attention to holding Mr. Trump accountable for his latest abuse of the legal system. More to come. Yeah. So.
No, this is the thing that gets me. I mean, you know, I remember him filing that. I remember going, you know, you're going to have to be deposed and there's going to be discovery. It's like yesterday I talked about Giuliani is suing President Biden because Biden said that he's Putin's puppet. Well, okay, now you're suing Biden. So his lawyers are going to, they're going to comb
destroy
through.
Destroy you.
Exactly.
They will destroy him. And that's the thing, is like, then you'll end up having all of this information that could prove that Giuliani really was Putin's puppet. Like, it could end up working out in Biden's favor.
Yeah.
And that's sort of what happened here with this Cohen case, is it's like, dude, Cohen has spent years and years with this man, working with this man, and now suddenly he has an opportunity to have his lawyers ask questions under oath about things that he as a lawyer could not discuss.
Yeah.
And now suddenly it would, oops, be in the public record from the court documents. And of course he wasn't going to get deposed. I mean, it's just the stupidest thing in the world, but he has gone on with this, you know, for months. And that's the thing that Trump does, right? Is he sues people to intimidate them and forces them to pay months and months of legal fees, and then drops it out of the blue and is like, okay, we're done here. But the thing is now it sort of feels like the turnaround is fair play with Trump. Now he's the one who really has to deal with all of these lawsuits and all of these legal fees. And you know, it's got to, like, he's starting to run out of cash.
Yeah, no, it's starting to catch up with him. Now we'll, you go back to your little text machine and ask Cohen if he's going to sue for legal expenses for a frivolous lawsuit. Because can you just, you know, file a lawsuit? They go, oh, well, we changed our mind. Yeah, no harm, no foul. Can you do that?
That is a good question, because sorry, I was actually doing it as you were saying, sue for legal expenses.
Yeah, let's see if we get a response back on that, because, you know,
right?
Because it's always been my view that you file these, you better go through with it.
And Florida in particular, the thing is that they have the frivolous lawsuit laws too. I don't know what their slap suits are necessarily, but already there was the lawsuit that Trump lost when he sued Hillary Clinton and like 500 other people, you know, and he what's her name, his other lawyer, DeJure, got fined like a ton of cash. I think it was almost $1 million.
Yeah, so, look, every you know, I think it was Rick Wilson who said that everything Trump touches dies.
Yes.
Or everyone Trump touches goes broke. Because today, the beautiful statement today, Mike Lindell, broke. We've lost everything, every dime. It's all gone. All of it, he said. Those are his words. We've lost everything. Every dime, all of it is gone. His lawyers are bailing on him, and he's still being sued by what? $1.3 billion by Dominion. Smartmatic is going after him for a huge amount of money. That guy, he better come up with a new gimmick besides a pillow and slippers.
Yeah, because basically it's going to end up being Smartmatic brings you pillows at the end of this thing. So Cohen responded, and so I said, "Are you going to sue him for legal expenses?" And he goes, "Look at the last sentence of my quote, which is more to come." So pretty sure that that's an indication of yes.
There's your answer. And the thing is, you know, the judge, you know, and looking at what the judge did, you know, with Trump, you know, having to disclose all of the LLCs, basically lay everything out. I mean, do we now find out he's not as rich as he said he was, and he doesn't own half of what he claims he owns? And do we now find that it was all just a con, that all of it, that some of us believed it was from the beginning?
Exactly. Like, that's the thing, is I feel like we spent the first like year of the campaign and first year of his presidency digging through all of these financial documents, and none of it really made sense to folks who cover this kind of economic issues. And right. For the biographers like Tim O'Brien and David K. Johnston, they're like, "Y'all, we've been doing this for like decades. He ain't got no money." And interesting, it's one of the funny things that of all people, Joy Behar and The View talks about it. She's like, you know, he didn't hate Rosie O'Donnell until she started questioning his wealth. The second she started questioning his wealth, it was like, you know, he was on her. And that was the genesis of their feud.
Can you do that again?
but
here's the thing, and this is the serious question then, because I've been saying from the beginning he's been a con man. I've believed he's been a con man all along. You've heard all of the stories back in 2015 and 16 about all the people that he stiffed, you know, the bankruptcies, all this stuff. Will it matter to the faithful? I mean, is there an epiphany? Is there a light bulb moment? Do you think for some that they go, "Oh, I was conned"? Do you think that's possible?
I don't know. I mean, we were talking a little bit before the show about cultism, and the way that Cohen talks about, you know, living life under the world of Donald Trump is it's a lot like a cult, where you have this this personality, you know, this God that you're following around like an evangelical pastor. And, you know, it's that Joel Osteen kind of thing, and people flock to it. And so I don't know. I mean, it's the same thing with him. Like, he, you know, obviously has his private jets and all of his fancy lifestyle, and he probably has more money than Donald Trump does too. And in the end, that doesn't deter them from him. I think what will change is one of my favorite things that happened today. My favorite piece of news, other than this, obviously, was Representative Moskowitz filed or sent a letter to the Palm Beach County appraiser.
Yep.
And said, "Hey, I don't know if you noticed, but Donald Trump has been saying that his Mar-a-Lago property is worth like $1.5 billion. You assess it at something else. Is it possible that maybe he should be paying a hell of a lot more in property taxes?"
And look, I said that from the beginning. If these properties are worth what he says they're worth, why isn't he paying taxes out the wazoo on them?
Yes.
As any one of us would be.
And the thing is if you look at all of those documents, whenever his property taxes went up, based on the assessment, his lawyers were, you know, his accountants and his lawyers were on it fast. They were just like, oh, no, we dispute this. Mar-a-Lago isn't worth whatever it was that you said it was. It's actually worth a lot less. So our property taxes are going to be a lot less. And so it's like it's exactly what the lawsuit in New York is about.
Right.
Where he's playing this game of, you know, it's cheaper here, it's more there.
But here's the thing, and I'm going to defend him a little bit, because rich people get away with this all the time. This is a rich people thing. And the thing that infuriates me is, you know, people would defend Trump. Well, he's just smart. No, this is what rich people get away with all the time. Trump has exposed it, and good for him. Thank goodness Trump has put himself out there to be exposed as the fraud that he is and the cheat that he is, so that maybe we can deal with it. You know, for me, you know, the thing that came out of this trial was his defense. And maybe you'll think it's as important as I do. He says, I can't overinflate my properties because I can always go to the Saudis and get what I want. And I'm going, wait a second. How is that possible?
Yeah.
And then what are you giving the Saudis so that they're giving you whatever you want?
Yeah, I mean, that's where this sort of goes from just a regular, everyday rich dude who's bilking the system to, holy crap, did he just reveal that he has some sketchy relationships with the Saudi government and that they owe him money for stuff?
Yes. But here's the thing. We find out today. This is another one of those things. And I go back to something I've said a million times in the Trump era. Think about everything we know about Donald Trump. Think about everything that we've heard, all of the horrible stories, all of the, you know, the soldiers are suckers and losers. And, you know, think about all of that stuff. And then imagine all the stuff we don't know.
Yeah.
So this story comes out today that, you know, he's with this Australian billionaire and he's leaning in and whispering and telling him about our nuclear subs. And, you know, my mind goes to this place of, you know, are there any people working in Mar-a-Lago who aren't on some foreign country's, intelligence payroll somewhere? Aren't spies for some foreign intelligence agency? Because national secrets are laying on tables in the bathrooms. He's whispering to people in the ballroom about our nuclear capacity. Really?
Here's the thing, though. They don't even have to have their spies, you know, placed in there as employees. They can just have some rando pay $200,000 for a Mar-a-Lago membership and then pal around with him all the time and, you know, be make friends with him and, you know, get him a little lubed up and be like, hey, you want some pie? You know, you want to chat about nuclear secrets? Like, you know, I mean, it's just, it's so absurd, but that's really what was happening. And we suspected as much, but now it really seems like he's kind of just dangling it out there for everyone to see.
What kind of pie?
One of the things, right. I'm sure he eats a lot of pie. I'm sure he probably eats the fried pies from McDonald's. Right. They don't have the actual fried one anymore, do they? They
do
the baked ones. Anyway, so the thing that I found the most interesting today is the you made me lose my train of thought. Dang you. What were we talking about?
Spies at Mar-a-Lago. On the foreign payrolls.
Oh, the thing that we found out today, and I think one of the filings from Trump's lawyers in Miami for the classified documents case, because they're complaining about how there's no secure facility for them to read stuff and that's delaying things and yada, yada. One of the things that I didn't know is that there are three documents that he had that are so secret that he can't even view them at a secure facility. He can only view them in Washington, D.C. And at that point, your mind is just reeling about what on earth was this document?
Yeah.
You know, what were these things? What were they saying? And who was he giving them to?
No, and this is the thing. You know, I go back to this story with this Australian billionaire. You know, how many times has this happened? How many people has he, to butter up or to try and, get some kind of favor with? Has he just let stuff out? Or, you know, he doesn't even care that it's top secret or classified because it doesn't matter to him. He's just blurting stuff out. This is why you don't give guys like that the nuclear football. You just don't do it. You don't give them the code. You don't do it.
How many people are he, like, is he telling Mike Lindell this stuff, and is Mike Lindell then calling up, you know, the Russians being like, hey, I'm in this bad lawsuit with Smartmatic and I need some money.
Yeah,
I here's mean, the secret I can give
but
you.
But yet I hear the right wing, you know, outrage machine going on about, well, you know, Donald Trump was, you know, he was tough on Putin. You know, we know he's got stuff on Putin. You go, really? I think it's the other way around. I think Putin's got stuff on a lot of Republicans. Or why else would they be doing his bidding? I don't know if you saw the statement recently that he basically said the war would end in a week if they could cut off access to Western weapons, because they're almost out of weapons. So you see the Republicans in the House going, no, we're going to cut off aid to Ukraine. I don't know. There seems like kind of a quid pro quo there.
It does. It sort of seems like Putin is just writing the press releases for them at this point. And people like Ron Johnson, especially, you know, it's exactly like you say, what do they have on Ron Johnson? What the heck was he doing in Russia whenever he was visiting with Putin there? You know, what videos do they have? Stay away from that vodka, man.
So let me ask you, with all the craziness in the House and all of the fun and entertainment, day two of no speaker vacation. Evidently now it's going to be retribution and vengeance. They threw Nancy Pelosi and Steny Hoyer out of their offices. Now they're going after Matt Gaetz. They're going to cawthorn Matt Gaetz, which couldn't happen to a better person. In fact, you know, we can change the cawthorn to Gaetz when he's gone. Any thoughts on what we're going to see coming, what the fun and entertainment's going to be?
So one of the first things that I thought when all of this was going down with Matt Gaetz is I was like, you know, if John Boehner was there, Matt Gaetz would have been gone a long time ago. He would probably be in jail by now. Just because that's sort of the way that Boehner worked, is he would, if he didn't like somebody, he would find information about them out. And what was that one guy out of Illinois that had the like sketchy real estate deals? He got rid of that guy really fast. And really, it's because Boehner was secretly basically passing around different pieces of opposition research to progressive news people.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, how he got rid of folks. I don't think McCarthy, I can't decide if McCarthy either didn't care or if he's so aligned with Matt Gaetz that he actually supported half of the stuff that Matt Gaetz wanted.
Yeah.
Because that's the weird thing, is he's been kind of a nutter for a long time, and he's only been forced to moderate because it's just bad for him in PR terms.
Yeah. So last question. Speaker Trump, yes or no?
So here's the thing. Is
a MAGA rally every day. It would be a MAGA rally every day, according to Marjorie Three Names. It would be the House of MAGA. Think about it. Could be fun. Could be entertaining.
Rule 26 of the Republican rules say you can't be the speaker if you've been indicted.
They can change that.
They can change it.
I've got it on good authority. Real simple. They could change it. They wanted to. If they really wanted to, they could change it.
They could. They'd have to elect a speaker, change the rules, fire that speaker, and then elect Donald Trump.
Well, they got a temporary one. They got the bow tie wearing Wall Street.
Yeah. Bumper. The only action that he can take is he can hold a vote for a new speaker. There's no other thing that he can do.
Well, we will see. We'll see how this, we'll see what happens. But you know, I'm pushing for it. I want Speaker Trump. I think it would be a good thing for the Republican Party. Best thing they could do for themselves.
It's kind of the burn it all down.
Yep.
Method where it's just like, here, let me just shove you off that cliff that you're standing on.
The dumpster's on fire. Let me just push it into the ocean.
Yeah, kind of. It really is. And you can just burn and drown out there by yourself. Have fun.
I was just going with drown, but you got the burn and drown. All right. Sarah, as always, great stuff. Thank you for the breaking news. I'll look forward to talking to you back here next time.
Oh, thank you. Have a good day tomorrow.
You as well. Our good friend Sarah Burris. Make sure you check out their website, rawstory.com. Find all the incredible work that she does. And I'm sure the breaking news. Quick break. Right back after this. Stick around.
Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1945. That was a day known in Hollywood as Black Friday. After World War II, the movie industry began to rake in profits. But they did not pass those profits along to their employees. 10,000 members of the Conference of Studio Unions were on strike. They were part of the Brotherhood of Carpenters and Joiners. They were also in a jurisdictional battle with the International Alliance of Theatrical Stage Employees, or IATSE, over who should represent stage decorators. The strike wore on for half a year. The studios had more than 100 films backlogged and were able to wait out the strikers. But as the strike continued and the studios remained silent, pressure mounted. Despite the tensions between the two unions, thousands of IATSE members refused to cross the picket lines. On Black Friday, the strikers decided to concentrate their efforts at the Warner Brothers Studios gate. 300 picketers gathered to hold the line. Scabs, hired by Warner Brothers, tried to drive through the workers' picket lines to the studio. Variety accounted what happened next, writing, quote, "Strikers deployed from their barricades, halted non-strikers, and rolled three automobiles on their sides. By noon, reinforcements arrived from both sides. Firemen were called in to turn their hoses on the striking workers. Warner Brothers security deployed tear gas. Common for the time, accusations were hurled that the Conference of Studio Union Strikers were communists. As a result of the strike, the Conference of Studio Union's employees were assigned to other jobs in the studios. When they refused, they were locked out. The union never recovered. The violence at the Warner Brothers Studios gate also helped to fuel the passage of the Taft-Hartley Act through Congress, which eroded union protections. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
I mean, stop and think about it for a second. You know, all of the classified documents that found its way to Mar-a-Lago, all of the stories that we already know of Trump, you know, just telling stories, just being Trump, just being a good golf buddy. You know, trying to endear himself to his companion. And, you know, hey, you know, see, this is one of those things that I said from the beginning about the classified documents. And I still believe this. I know a lot of people say, no, no, he was going to sell them. No, he was going to do all this stuff. I don't know. I don't think so. Maybe I'm not ruling it out. But I think it's much simpler than that. I think it's, hey, look what I have. Look how important I am. Look at me. It's all about his, it's always been about his ego. It's always been a love fest about him. These rallies are all to feed his ego. It's not about the people in the crowd. Could care less about them. It's about his ego. And having these classified documents, having things that nobody else has, that's an aphrodisiac. That's his ED medicine that he snorts. You know, like Matt Gaetz, according to Mark Wayne Mullen. Don't know if he did it or not, according to Mark Wayne Mullen, allegedly. Save myself from being sued. But, you know, this is one of those things where him having all of this information is dangerous to national security. And we've not had this in any other president throughout history, that we were concerned that, you know, in his business dealings, you know, it might be a good sales thing. You know, if you've ever had lunch with a really slippery salesperson, you know how they like to build themselves up. That's how I see Trump. And are you surprised that he does this? No, I'm not surprised at all. Were you surprised that there were classified documents laying around on the table at a reception? No, of course not. He's careless. He's reckless. He's all of those things. Now, what the MAGA crowd will tell you is that's what they love about him. He's unpredictable. He's dangerous. Yeah, he's dangerous, all right. Dangerous to our national security. Because as I was thinking about this, you go, I wonder how many of our intelligence assets around the world have been murdered because of his looseness.
You're listening to The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.